So ESPN gets a lot of attention, but it sort of deserves it, given how big it is, how much revenue it generates, how much profitability it generates.
Yeah, the real question for the Walt Disney Company on the management call tonight will be, do you have a strategy to take ESPN direct to consumers over the internet, kind of bypassing the cable distributors and going direct to consumers?
2 years behind bars for Jakarta's Christian governor. That's the verdict from an Indonesian court on Tuesday in a trial seen as a test for the country's religious tolerance. Basuki Jahajapanama, known as Ahok, was accused of insulting the Quran. And for months, Islamist groups have been calling for him to be jailed.
Earlier this afternoon, President Trump called me and informed me he was firing Director Comey. I told the president, Mr. President, with all due respect, you are making a big mistake. First question the administration has to answer is why now? We know the House is investigating Russian interference in our elections. We know the Senate is investigating. We know the FBI has been looking into whether the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians. It is troubling that Attorney General Sessions, who had recused himself from the Russian investigation, played a role in firing the man leading it.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's May 10th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Lots to cover for you a little later in the program. Silicon Valley, no longer the number one place for talent, tech talent. We'll talk to an expert about that. And in just a minute, we'll tell you a little bit about some of the best and worst states for working moms. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, it does appear that the firing yesterday of James Comey will impact the opening on Wall Street later this morning, as investors are concerned about the abrupt firing of FBI Director James Comey. Dow futures are off more than 40 points this morning, nearly 50 now. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. The initial reaction to Trump's move late yesterday has been to put a bid on safe haven plays. With gold and Japanese yen strengthening, one analyst says equities have retreated just slightly, says the markets are still wary of an unpredictable president. Again, Dow futures off about 50 points as we head toward the opening bell. A lot of that uneasiness of investors about the firing of James Comey. Asian Dow, the Nikkei, and other Asian markets generally higher this morning, with the Nikkei up almost a third. In Europe, most of the indices are lower. The FTSE, the only one that is higher, up about 16 points this morning. Back in this country, gold and silver are trading higher. Crude oil is up almost 1% at $46.32 a barrel. The White House says the firing of FBI Director James Comey and his deputy is not a cover-up. Calls growing on Capitol Hill now for a special prosecutor to investigate possible ties between the Trump administration and Russia, the Trump campaign. ABC News political editor Rick Klein is in Washington, says that'll be the focus today.
A bombshell from President Trump with long-lasting political policy and national security implications. His stated rationale that this has to do with Comey's handling of the Hillary Clinton investigation ignores the fact that President Trump was mainly complimentary of what he was putting out about Hillary Clinton during the campaign. That will raise questions.
The Russian ambassador is visiting the White House today. He will be there today with the president and the secretary of state, as all of this is happening with the FBI and the Russian investigation. We'll keep you informed about this as we move forward here on the Opening Bell and in the Steve Cochran Show coming up this morning, so don't go away from WGN. WalletHub has done an analysis of 13 key metrics across the U.S. to identify the best and worst states for working moms. Jill Gonzalez is one of the analysts at Wallet Hub. She's with us this morning. Jill, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell. First question for you is, what did you study here? What did you look at specifically?
Well, we looked at a number of different metrics here across three different categories. So childcare, professional opportunities, and work-life balance. A lot of northeastern states tended to be toward the top of the list, some southern states toward the bottom.
One of the big things about this people should know from the outset, I mean, if women are listening, they know this, but let me tell the men here just in case. Women make up half of the workforce. More than 70% of moms with children younger than 18 are working. So there are a lot of working moms out there in this sample size, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, a lot of working moms here. Really, the bulk of mothers are still working today, and many of them have kids far younger than 18.
So the big thing about this is the best and worst. I know that sometimes it's hard to find who does what right and wrong, but who's at the top and who's at the bottom?
The very top. The top three states here, New Jersey was at number three, then Minnesota at number two, doing the best for the Midwestern states, and Vermont was number one. The opposite end of the spectrum here, Nevada was number 49, Louisiana 50th, Alabama 51st. We did include D.C. in the mix here, too.
Illinois, just for those listening locally, was at number 10. Indiana's number 14. Wisconsin was number 13. So when you look at the top, like Vermont and Minnesota, what are they doing right there?
Well, they're coming really close to doing things perfectly in some areas here. Child care is certainly one of them. The costs are lower than average, taking up around 15 to 18% of a working mom's annual salary, which is definitely higher than we're used to hearing. But unfortunately, that number is climbing to like 25% in many other states. And the quality is there, so they're getting a lot of bang for their buck in terms of child care. That goes for school systems as well. Professional opportunities, we're seeing that the female unemployment rate is relatively low, around 3.5%. And there's a good ratio of female to male executives. Women are making around 85 to 86 cents on the dollar compared to men. Keep in mind, the national average today is around 83 cents.
Jill, hang on with us. We'll take a break here to check traffic. Jill Gonzalez at Wallet Hub. We'll be back with more on the best and worst states for working moms as we head up to Mother's Day this weekend.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the NASDAQ ticked up to another record yesterday, but a drop by energy stocks held other indexes back. The NASDAQ rose 18 points. The S&P 500 slipped 2.5. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 36.5 points. The Walt Disney Company, parent to ABC News, reported an 11% jump in profit in the second quarter. Disney's film studio division posted operating income of $656 million, helped by the box office success of Rogue One and Beauty and the Beast. This week's earnings results from department stores are expected to show the biggest drop in first quarter profits for retailers since 2009. Retailers are slashing jobs at the sharpest pace in 7 years. This time it's not the economy that's the problem, but the changing habits of consumers doing more of their shopping online. And Facebook says researchers have found a new way to use artificial intelligence to translate material on its social network for faster and more accurate translations. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. At 522, Wallet Hub has done an analysis of the country and the best and worst states for working moms as we head up to Mother's Day this weekend. Jill Gonzalez is with us from Wallet Hub this morning. Jill, I was surprised to see on this report that some of the states that do well overall don't do so hot when it comes to providing good daycare and affordable options for daycare for moms. What's up with that?
Yes, and this is an interesting dichotomy here because the best daycare systems are usually also the most expensive. Places like New York State, Washington State, North Dakota, and Oklahoma get a little bit better when we come to costs and systems. But lowest child care costs, and this is in terms of the percentage of a woman's income, places like Mississippi, South Carolina, Louisiana, Alabama, mostly southern states, unfortunately, the quality is not there. So there is this sense that you're getting what you pay for.
So if you had to give like a generalization or a general overall grade to how we're doing nationally, how would you rate it? How would you say it?
This is one thing that vastly differs across the country. I mean, we broke this down into red states and blue states. Blue states ranked around 15th on this list. Red states more like 33rd. So even just across party lines, we're seeing vast differences from the workplace to work-life balance to child care. So it's hard to give our nation one grade. I think some states certainly are getting A's, others more like D's.
So there are obviously experts have different opinions about how to improve things. What are some of the general big ones out there? Like, for instance, with balancing work and home life and finding that time for family and work, what are the experts saying about how to make it better?
Well, a lot of them are kind of talking about going from the bottom up. So not offering a top-down solution, not waiting around for a state legislature to pass some type of parental leave mandate, et cetera. A lot of this change has to happen kind of grassroots-wise and start at the organizational level with companies offering parental leave, with companies offering daycare options, et cetera, and then kind of working its way up. And that's what we saw in California as well.
So for working moms out there who are trying to balance all of these things, how do they impact the overall workforce in terms of when they find and have these struggles? Does that impact all of us who are in the workforce?
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned earlier that now women make up about half of the workforce, 70% at least, are moms with young kids that are working now. And yet, they've earned only about 83% of what men made last year. And that really does affect much more than just women, because these are families. These are really taking care of not only what the men are doing, but really children and kind of shaping our future as well. So it's not just a woman in the workforce problem. It really does span the entire workforce.
You mentioned that this study looked at red states versus blue states. That brings to mind the questions of what, you know, governments are doing locally and on statewide levels. What advice would this survey give to them in terms of doing what is right and what's not?
Well, I think that universal health care has obviously been a hot button issue lately. What gets less thought, I think, is universal preschool programs that really would have huge implications on the workforce. Medicaid expansion certainly was one thing that did help working moms. Anti-discrimination laws, paid sick leave policies, child care subsidies, I mean, all of these things have been looked in, some more than others, into some certain states. But, you know, all of them certainly would help here in terms of indicators for the best states for working moms.
And one of the things, too, you studied, you mentioned this briefly earlier, but it's this ratio of female and male executives to each gender. What did you find there more specifically, and why is it important to measure this?
Yeah, this was one thing that saw the most dramatic differences. We saw that the female executive to male executive ratios were three times higher in places like D.C., Maine, the Dakotas, than, say, Texas, Alabama, South Carolina, Utah. So that's really where we're seeing huge differences. And that brings to mind not only the opportunities that women have just in so much as job openings, but what comes next? You know, how can they grow? And only about 6% of S&P 500 companies' chief executives are female right now. 6%. So we haven't even hit double digits there.
Yeah, and it's in that area. South Dakota, you mentioned, was one of North Dakota, Montana. Those seem like weird places to have that ratio be the highest.
That's something that has just come about within the last 5 years or so for a couple of different reasons. So both of the Dakotas have huge entrepreneurial growth over the past 5 years. A lot of that has to do with oil, new tech industries, et cetera. And women are actually at the forefront of a lot of those tech industries kind of overlapping with oil. So I think that's been really interesting for both of the Dakotas, especially South Dakota. I mean, more businesses have been popping up there just in terms of the population than California.
Yeah, and one of the other findings of the study, North Dakota had the lowest female unemployment rate at 2.4%. Is that, again, can you link that to the oil, or is that just generally their state's in good condition?
I would say both, and more so oil than just new business there. You know, it really is bringing in a lot of people to take advantage of that situation right now. But the typical female unemployment rate is up around 6%, higher than male by about a percentage point.
Jill, there's so much stuff out there, so many places where women could find resources to learn more about this. What are some of the best that you've seen?
Well, to get an overall perspective, especially if you're looking at relocating, I would say look at Wallet Hub and see exactly high level kind of what you're looking for. Then once you see what state you think you want to head to, what state you're already heading to, because that's just where your job is, there are great resources for women within each state. So a lot of these will be on the state.gov sites. A lot of them, especially if you're opening up shop, there's amazing women-only incubators across the country, especially now in the South. I think we're seeing them pop up more and more. Tennessee has great hubs in Nashville and Memphis. So that's one thing to really keep in mind if you are kind of venturing out on your own.
All of these links, some of them, the good ones, are linked from wallethub.com. We're going to link out to this study and survey as well. But, Jill, it's good of you to be with us again here on the Opening Bell. Thanks for the info.
Anytime.
Jill Gonzalez is an analyst at Wallet Hub, the best and worst states for working moms.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, an eco-friendly solution for commuters battling road congestion, solar-powered e-bikes and sharing stations are being installed and tested at one busy industrial park in Palo Alto, California, where 28,000 employees can have a hard time commuting.
Definitely like that. That's cool.
They're made by a company called SwiftMile. Co-founder Colin Roach says all riders have to do is download the app and reserve a bike.
Show up, you hit a button, boom, the bike's available. And then you could take it home, you could take it wherever you like. You know, they have a 40-mile range.
And the bikes themselves are equipped with Fitbit-like technology.
Now we can share with them, here's how many signal occupancy trips you've avoided, here's how much you've eased your parking.
So far, the bikes have been a welcome addition for busy commuters.
I can make it home almost faster on the bike than I can on the highway.
SwiftMile hopes to attract the attention of other companies whose employees battle busy streets and crowded buses every day. With Tech Trends, I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:41. Glad to have you with us. There's a new report, a global startup report, and it says Silicon Valley is no longer number one for talent. We thought we'd talk a little bit about this today with the writer who has been reporting on this. Mar Mossen Mock is with us from Amsterdam. He's a writer for thenextweb.com. Mar, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Yes, thank you for having me on, Steve.
It's good of you to be with us. What is the headline here from this report? Silicon Valley's no longer number one. Who is?
Well, in talent, it's Singapore, who actually has topped the mega tech hub. But I mean, of course, Silicon Valley is still number one overall, but it's still interesting to see that there are other cities that can actually compete with the tech mecca.
When measuring this, what do you look at to get this measure?
So this report was done by Startup Genome, and they have around eight categories that we're looking at, but the most important ones perhaps are performance, funding, market reach, talent, startup experience, and then there's also a lot on global connectedness, how well you can do to reach other markets and so forth, and also founder ambition and strategy.
Mm-hmm. Singapore seems well-suited, well-placed for that, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, actually, they can actually attest this great success to the government's initiatives that started over 20 years ago. So I think basically what the lesson is that we can learn from this is that it's a long-term progress that you have to take these decisions far in advance and keep working on it, because they only made their debut to the top 20 in 2015, and now they're number one in talent.
Yeah,
so it's an interesting jump.
Right, and there's also a lesson there, too, for governments, something that we're watching sort of cautiously in this country, how our government is dealing with startups and tech, and that's important. It's an important lesson, isn't it?
Yes, well, I feel that, I mean, I come from a different perspective than perhaps in America, but I feel that that is absolutely vital for, too, because startups, essentially, I mean, they are weak when beginning, but they have a lot of potential to grow. So if there are initiatives done by the government, then the profit, it will always be profitable for the society there and also for the government in the long term. And we've seen that there's some drop in America, especially with Los Angeles and Chicago, because of their lowered score in global connectedness. So I think that's a big warning, because you can't just focus on your internal markets. You have to be ready to for global expansions.
You're right. Right. Some of the other concerning for at least Chicago, we're at 18 on this list, down about 11 spots. What is that, you think, attributed to?
Yeah, so basically what Startup Genome said was that it's due to the lowered global connectedness. And it's difficult to actually, like, because this report was done over the course of 2016, so it's difficult to attribute this to the election. But still, I don't think it really helps, because the tech and startup world is all about mobility. And when you start closing down borders or building any kind of walls in a metaphorical sense, it will hamper growth in general.
Yeah, and it's especially concerning for Chicago, because we really are connected to the world. It's we have O'Hare Airport. It's always been seen as a global city. So to see it knocked down that many spaces is a little concerning. But generally for the U.S. as a whole, seven cities in this list, right?
Yeah, so it's really difficult to say that the startup scene in the U.S. is being threatened, because, of course, they dominate the list in every way. But still, you can see a lot of mobility going on. As you said, Chicago dropped 11 places, and there are new cities like Beijing and Shanghai, and new European cities as well, like Stockholm, which is pretty small but has a large global reach, because they start off with global expansions pretty early on in their marketing. But it's, I mean, the U.S. is doing pretty well, but it's just that Asia and Europe are actually gaining on the U.S. rather than the U.S. losing their status, I think.
Yeah, you probably know about this more than a lot of us listening, but in this world of startups and entrepreneurship, what is it, you know, losing a ranking like this necessarily mean? Does it mean that startups are going to be going to these cities, or does it mean that that's where they're going to get their funding, or all of the above, or no?
Well, I think it's basically a way to form, get a bit of an idea of what kind of environment your startup is in. So what you can do better and what you need to work on within the city or move to another city. But then it doesn't really tell the whole picture, because we have London moving up three seats and it's now currently ranked number three. So it's doing very well, but we haven't still seen the post-Brexit effects. And there's been a lot of talk, like in The Guardian, there was mention of cities that might actually be able to that were likely places for British entrepreneurs to move post-Brexit. And there we have our Amsterdam. And that's mainly due to, like, good tech hubs like TQ and such. So I'm not sure that startups will move to another city just because they rank lower, but I think it's a good guideline of what opportunities you have within your startup ecosystem. Yeah. And then it's, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we often talk about Silicon Valley and all of these other places, but New York City's always up there, too. It doesn't get mentioned as much in some of the press, though. It always seems like we're talking about Silicon Valley. Why is that?
Well, I think, I mean, Silicon Valley is kind of homogenous in that sense, because it's the tech place to be. So, and that's their main brand. But with New York City, you have all these kind of different associations, so it's really difficult to narrow New York City's brand, if you can say, down to a startup tech. Like, everybody wants to be in New York anyway. So, of course, there's going to be a lot of startups there as well.
Yeah, and I guess we have always have to bow to Silicon Valley with the Googles and the Facebooks and all, and the Apples and all of that stuff out there, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, I mean, you could associate Silicon Valley with San Francisco, but you have this isolated town, and so you can just... Yeah, it's become the word for startups and describing tech-friendly environment, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
Mara, thanks for being with us this morning, and we're going to link your story on thenextweb.com out this morning. We appreciate you taking time for us.
Yes, thank you.
Mara Mawson-Mock is a writer for thenextweb.com. Again, Silicon Valley no longer the... Overall, it is overall number one for talent, but no longer at the top. A lot of big international cities are fighting, including Singapore. We're going to link his story out there. This from the Global
Startup Ecosystem Report and Rankings 2017.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:53. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures off 53 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Gold and silver are trading higher today. Silver up almost 1%. Crude oil is up almost 1% as well. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A USDA report due out today at 11 o'clock Chicago time. We'll get the May 10 supply-demand report. And that report will include the government's first official crop production and usage estimates for the 2017-18 marketing year. One trader said it's the pre-report buy beans, sell corn trade. Now, wet conditions that have slowed planting in some crop areas of the Midwest, as we learned yesterday, did bring support also. USDA yesterday said 14% of the soybean crop has been planted. But at the end of the day, the May wheat contract was up 2.5, May corn up 2.25, and May soybeans up 8.75. Looking at livestock trade yesterday and comments by Dennis Smith, livestock market analyst, who said the hog market late cash report impressive. Prices were $2 higher, and the closing pork showed the cutout up $2.03. At $81.02. And the cattle trade came under pressure. Started well yesterday with live cattle and feeder cattle trading sharply higher in the early going. However, feeder cattle started to fade and turn lower. Sell stops came into the market, and then soon live cattle followed suit with liquidation-type sell paper driving prices limit down. By the close, the market had come off limit down, particularly in the live cattle contract, and so that will not trade with expanded margins or limits today, but the feeder cattle will. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
And thanks, Orion. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook, it's Wednesday, May 10th. Only one major government report today, in addition to the USDA report Orion mentioned about agriculture. Treasury releases its federal budget for April. Also in the earnings list today, Snap, the owner of Snapchat, has its first ever earnings today as a public company. Some of the other things we're looking forward to on this Wednesday, 21st Century Fox earnings, Wendy's, Toyota, Whole Foods. U.S. budget statement is due out as well. Crude oil inventories report. Chinese inflation data also expected today. The retail earnings begin in earnest tomorrow. Kohl's and Macy's reporting earnings. Then JCPenney on Friday and a couple of other retailers in there as well as retail earnings kick up. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, May 10th, 2017.